play baseball? What position? And I dismissed it, Pax. I didn't talk about it. And the people who knew me were like, do you realize how important that part of your journey is, man? And I'm like, yeah, I just didn't like all the other guys who all they would do is introduce themselves as baseball players and only talk about baseball and like they had nothing else. You got something to offer because the skill set and what you've learned can help other people in their current job, in the mindset work that you've done. You can help people, man. And when somebody told me I can help people and I was being selfish for not talking about my story, unlock.
Thank you so much for tuning into another Cool Down Conversations. Today's guest is Charlie Ruiz. He's a former professional baseball player and now leadership performance coach. He shares his story with us and how we should share our story and our experience to help unlock the potential in others. Tune in for a great listen. Week, but I heard something amazing. The reason why I brought this up was, you know, sometimes as athletes, we can get caught up in like, yo, if I'm not doing something, I'm losing or I'm failing. And actually in church, I heard this. He said, standing your ground is not retreating. And I was just like, wait a second. I'm going to play that back for a second. And it was like, in the context of war, standing your ground is winning, but you're not moving. You're not advancing. And to like, to hold your ground and to be able to be okay in this space of like recovery, maybe there's not a lot of highlights going on right now, but it's still a place of improvement, right? Mm-hmm. So I know as an athlete, it's like if we're not busy, we're not really working. But right now, I also see the value in standing your ground because that's still victory. And I knew that if I shared that with you, that something would pop up in your brain too, because we get caught up in the business side of things and the athletic side of things. You know, you have a whole family. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing next? What's this? How do you feel when it comes to these moments of like you just finished an amazing milestone in your life? You married your brother, you sent him off on his way, and now the dust is kind of settling. How are you recovering now and before this next step into this next phase of what you got going on? Because I know there's a lot going on.
Thank you for this, first of all.
Yeah.
It's very timely. It's very timely. This is a day, the next 2 days, especially this weekend, is going to be my standing my ground, because it has been full bore for 2 or 3 weeks. And I think seeing it all come to this moment on Saturday, right, with my little brother, you know, best friend, being around all my like loved ones, and just elation, right? Just elation. And then coming right into like preparing a speech yesterday and going down to this college and speaking, and then looking at the week ahead, I'm like, all right, I need to find some stillness. And I think I'm being very intentional with my Friday. There's nothing on my calendar. And that may be half planning and half not taking any meetings and maybe even getting some time with my wife, where we will go right to a day resort thing where we're just kind of being still for a few hours. But I think as an athlete and also as a man, we feel that even more of if we're not moving forward or knocking things off our list, we aren't productive or efficient or contributing in the way that we feel like we should be contributing. And I think in today's coaching space and in this world, with a whole different conversation we'll probably get into, that's also a different take than I think a lot of the hardcore folks out there, that the message that they're sharing.
Sure.
There is power in stillness. So I'm embracing it. I try to embrace it with the executives and the coaches and the players that I do work with. Because we don't really experience it as athletes, because that's not the nature of us. So leaning into it now, I think, has become commonplace, where I think it's important to be able to stand your ground, as you shared.
Yeah. Wow. And I love how timely that was, because like, I know coming off the high of something is like, it's so sweet. And then the fall is like, dang, what the heck just happened? And then there's like that feeling of guilt, right? There's like, well, why should I feel like this? Why do I feel like this? And I think it's important to recognize that, to be in touch. I think it's the first step, right? Like, you know, clarity is curative type thing. But I wanted to share that with you because I knew you had this big weekend and I was feeling the same way. Yeah, that it was, I think it was just super beneficial for me as a person, me as a coach, me as, you know, the toolbox that I have now. And I think it just scratched the surface. But what it did ultimately for me was started to kind of, I don't know, uncover some things that I knew I have in me, and you know, more permission given than anything. So it was pretty powerful. And there's next steps to, like, you know, pulling on that string a little bit more, and we'll see where it goes. But
congrats.
You know, but it's all good stuff. And it stems from jumping into something unknown. Charlie, thank you so much for joining today. One thing I want to know, and people want to know, we want to hear about you today. And a little bit about your background and how you got to sit in this seat in front of me, because I know that's a long story. But I know that there's areas of your professional athletic career into a consulting role, into a leadership role, coaching now, you're a father. I mean, there's so many hats that you wear. But if you wanted to start us with, you know, what got you going today from a bit of your background in your playing career?
Yeah, no, thank you. And I'm excited to be here. The background is unconventional. I think that's the word that I like to use, as you would imagine. Unconventional in the sense of started on a baseball field and lived there for, you know, 25, 30 years. That was life. It always was. And I was fortunate to chase a childhood dream. I like to share that. It's like I got to see it. I didn't make it to the major leagues, but I got to get paid to play a game. And it was something I never really thought of. Junior college, right? I was not this highly touted, you know, person in high school. And I went to junior college and grinded for a couple years, built confidence, learned a lot from the staff there, kind of became a man on the field, right, in those couple years, and then was fortunate to land a Division I scholarship, which then put me in the space to get drafted in 2009 by the Colorado Rockies. And that was something I never really dreamed of. Like, truly wasn't something I ever thought of until I got there and was like, oh, I think that this might be something that I can do. You know, and then you do it for a couple of years. And again, not to go heavy into all of the sports side of it, but then it's taken away from you, right? After having thrown baseballs for 27 years, eventually your shoulder gives out. And right when you feel like your career is taken off, it gets taken away and you rehab for 2 years and you got to retire. So that then put me into a space of contemplation, kind of a dark spot, reshaping, redefining my identity. And that's just kind of part of the sports journey. But it's been a ride so far to this point, and I'm fortunate for it because I'm better for it now.
Mm. So it was a shoulder injury that ultimately stopped your career.
Yeah. Yeah. Both labrum and cuff. I figure I'm 2 years into the journey. And again, like, things are going well. I'm kind of climbing the ranks, as they say. And it was a moment out in Lexington, Kentucky. Like, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the weather. I'll never forget the opponent, right? I'll never forget just the whole buildup to it, especially because it wasn't like it was a, you know, you throw a pitch or you, like, it all happened. It just, something felt funny and I knew something was off. And then again, it kind of postponed. I call the retirement or the decision to not play anymore. It was forced on me, but it was also a slow burn, right? It was like you get hurt, then you rehab, then it's the off season, and you keep rehabbing, and you rehab some more, and then you eventually get surgery. So I just look at those couple years, and I'm like, I wish I would have been writing down what I was thinking about and who I was around. And I just remember it was so focused on getting better, and it didn't. But I did go back and get my degree because I knew that there was something else before.
That's so funny. I mean, talking with so many athletes, I mean, like, there's that prolonged space that you talk about, like, when there's an injury and you know something's off or your body's not performing the way that it was. And We hold on. Like, for me, it was COVID, actually. I mean, when COVID hit, I was playing in Sweden. Everything shut down. I came home. Contract was done. And I was like, dang, that didn't feel right. Like, I didn't leave the game on my own terms. Like, that's not cool. So then I went back to Costa Rica for a season and had a trial out in Phoenix with a team. and tore two ligaments in my ankle during the trial. And I was still like, and I knew, Charlie, at that time, like, you know, that was, this is different. Something's not right. And I remember I called my dad. I was bawling, man. Like, I was, it was such a corrupt thing that happened. Like, the agent that brought me out there, I haven't heard from him since. The club that offered me the trial just basically said, thanks for your time. And then, and that was it. And I was literally in the middle of the desert. Like, couldn't get anywhere. I couldn't walk. It was bad. And even then, I was like, all right, I'm going to do the rehab. I want to go out on my terms. I want to be able to walk away from the game saying, like, I finished and not like an injury. And so I totally understand what you're going through. I did for 6 months of just rehab. And they were like, you probably should do surgery. Opted not to. Great. I actually was able to come through that. Went back to England in the summer. Actually got offered a contract, but I was like, that was it. The writing was on the wall. It was like, what are we doing here now? You know? And I feel like that was the same thing for you. Maybe you got through the rehab and you could have kept playing, but you get there, you get what you've been working for. And it's like, is it, you know,
it's hard. I mean, sharing what you just did around like mm-hmm. being able to get through it and then get hurt, get back. And I think the words you used was close it on your own terms. And I completely agree with that. I think I've spoken a little bit about that before, and I'm happy to go here because we were talking a little bit about my brother's wedding, and some of the individuals that were there were from that junior college. And for me, I had talked to kind of an old mentor who also played professional baseball, who said in a version of close your own terms, it was like, close this chapter on your own terms.
Yeah.
And I took that to heart and went back to my junior college, which was Chabot Junior College. And that's where, again, I mentioned earlier, it's like where it was transformational for me. So I went back to coach there while I was rehabbing. And I didn't want to go play independent ball. I kind of made that decision in my head. I rehabbed. And there was a moment where I went out there and I called my dad. And I was like, hey, Pops, like, can you come out to the field? I'm going to throw another inner squad against the guys I've been coaching the last couple of years, a lot of them were at my little brother's wedding this past weekend, and just to sit in the stands and watch, right? And then I had my other dear friend, Mike, you know, in the back, kind of looking from a distance. And I'll never forget that day. I went out there, threw a couple pitches, faced a couple hitters, and it just didn't feel right. But this was my version of taking control and ownership of the moment and like my career and finding some way to close this chapter like on my terms. And it just happened to be at this junior college. And I walked out, right? My two coaches, the head coach, pitching coach that I had, you know, gone to battle with for a couple of years, looked at me kind of like a nice little head nod. Go over to my dad, to your point, just like you shared, like hugged him. He knew it was over. I cried. And that next day, I went and talked to that head coach and was like, I think it's time. And he was like, I know. And
All
of us have to find some sort of version of that. And it may come 3-4 years down the road. And that's part of the process of the work that you do and what you're trying to build out. And even just being able to have conversations like this is something that didn't happen 8 years ago. I'm grateful for, right, the connection to be able to help other athletes that might be going through it and you know, into that next phase.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's powerful. And I appreciate the plug on like, this is really what it is. It's a space to talk all things, like all things in between. Like there's the massive milestones. There's your career. Right. And then there's like, well, what the hell happens in between that? Like what's next? It's scary. So let's talk about what's next. So you made that huge decision, which was beautiful. Vision, it comes. And then now what, like, where do you go next? Who do you become? What's on the agenda? Like, what was your next step?
So we talk about what was in between there from the decision to what was next. Figure I'd gone back and just got my degree back in Long Beach State, which is a fun fact, like only 15% of people who sign a contract with Major League Baseball, you get 2 years to use your money to go back to school to leverage that education money. And a lot of guys will sign as juniors or seniors, and they don't go back and finish school. So if you're one of those guys, go back and finish school. Go use that money. It goes back in the pot. Go use it. But through that time, it was like, all right, what do I do? First one to graduate college in my family. family, blue collar, and just mm-hmm. like, again, my heroes, they were just like, we're supporting you, whatever you need, just let us know. But I didn't know. So I found myself fumbling around Silicon Valley trying to get sales jobs because that's what they told me to do as an athlete. I go do medical device sales. I went on some shadowing with, you know, a good teammate. I just went full curiosity trying to figure it out. And I mean, resume after resume, interview after interview, blowing everything. Like, I could not get any, nothing made sense. Because they're looking at me like, you've literally done nothing. Like,
right.
Until I walked into a startup where there happened to be a couple of athletes sitting across from me, and they were like, oh, you played professional baseball. Like, we can teach you some skills. We're going to sign you for like no money and just make sure it works out for the next 3 months. But at that point, I'm 6 months in. I was like, all right, like, sign me up. Sign me up, coach. Put me in. Found myself in like old Victorian Palo Alto near Stanford, truly in the startup world of like, all right, what do I do? Mm. And again, like us, like we do it as athletes, we let the external people tell us this is exactly what you do. Like, come on, coach, tell me what to do.
Right.
Whereas like in business, right, in this space, it's like, no, you got to kind of go get it in a different way. You got to be proactive in these different ways. You can't just depend on all this guidance and structure. And I'm like, well, I've lived with guidance and structure for like 25 years. So that was a big awakening for me. Something I haven't really talked about, but like that was a big awakening for me, where it's like, oh, like what you think you know is not the truth anymore. So go figure that out.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when I think about when I evaluated that, I had to start asking myself, what do you want? And then it took a few years, a lot of lessons of things aren't going to be laid out for you. And I fumbled around for probably six, seven years. I eventually landed a good job managing accounts for another startup after playing the big corporate game and then transitioning over. That's a whole other story. Happy to go there if you want. But eventually found, okay, I'm in this kind of sales, customer account management kind of environment. This is more my speed. I could nurture, I can build relationships. And I think if I am going to be in the sales environment, this is the type of environment I like to be in. But that didn't last too long either.
We get a lot of the same spiels too as athletes. It's like, oh, you're an athlete, you should go into sales. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, what does that mean? You know, it's like, I get it from the discipline side of things and the competition side of things. But to be honest with each other, like I don't love sales more than the next person. And like, and I'm kind of in like a sales role. I'm parts leader right now too. And the same reason, it's the same reasoning all the time. Oh, you're an athlete, you're competitive, you need that competitive edge. Yeah, true. I'm more on a collaborative type of position. You know, like from an athletic perspective, I'm more like the team's approach, which I get. Not so much on the cutthroat, like I put you down so I can get ahead type thing. And I would struggle with sales a lot because I would be like, yo, why is my team not eating too? You know, like what, why aren't we doing this together type thing? And I don't think that there's a one cookie cutter approach for athletes in the sales world, like when it comes next, because everybody is all right, put this into a perfect example on your baseball team. So your catcher, you could probably be a little bit more straight to the point with, because you're working with them every single day, as opposed to, I don't know, your best like hitter or your outfielder, your star person, right? Like, because maybe their ego is a little bit more gentle, but they receive the information differently, right? Like, you could talk to your catcher and be like, yo, we're fucking up right now. What are we doing? Or your first baseman, you had to maybe coddle a little bit and say, hey, you know, you missed that play, but next one we're going to get. And it's the same thing in the business world. I know as an athlete on my team, and when I got into a leadership role, how I spoke to my left back was completely different how I would speak to, you know, my striker, who had like a terrible attitude, but I knew he could score goals. Like, I needed him to play really well, and I kind of coddle him a little bit. And it's the same in the sales world. The cookie cutter approach of every athlete should be gung-ho, fast, driven, you know, crushing sales, is like, it just doesn't work. Something falls through the cracks there. And I think that we lose out on a lot of potential because we think, oh, athlete, they're going to grind. Athlete, they're going to get this done quick. And it's like, you know, everyone receives information differently. And I knew that as an athlete, that was true. How did you find that when you got into that role?
And also my now coaching firm and business. I understand the competitive discipline that it requires to be in sales, right? You got to have tenacity, willpower. I get that.
Sure.
I think the modern day sales approach and the modern day kind of sales professional, there is this side of empathy and servant leadership and collaboration that is more needed, just like the modern day coach, right? It's less cutthroat, it's less beat your teammates. And to your point, I remember going into sales meetings with specific, you know, managers, and it was like, you got to be topped off. You got to be like, why aren't, I'm like, we're missing the point here. Like, that's not what I'm here for. Right. And I mean, we're talking to big corporate, small companies. We're talking like, you know, a giant tech company where that was the whole mentality. And although I respect it because I was an athlete, I was like, that's where I'm built different. Like, I want all of you to win. And if the only message I'm hearing every single day is beat your common man that is on your team, then again, we're not going to, this isn't going to work because you're not understanding or seeing me, just like you just mentioned with you seeing your players, like you're not seeing me. And maybe that is why I fumbled around for a couple of years in sales, in a hunting role. It's not how I operate, and it won't be how I operate. And I think it was identifying that within myself and then allowing, again, that space to be like, no, this is how you, Charlie, operate, and that's okay. You don't have to be the cutthroat black book salesman, you know, traveling for 20 years and doing it. You can do it your own way. And then I just kind of kept reminding myself, like, that doesn't mean you're not a good salesman. And I will remember, this too, as I left, as I remember this, man, a senior leader had that bravado like that. He was a sales guy. And as I left to go join this coaching firm that we'll soon talk about, I remember leaving that office. And he looked back at me, and I didn't really talk to him at all because, again, it wasn't my cup of tea. He goes, hey. And I was like, what's up? Thinking he was going to give me some snarky, like, response. He's like, I just want to let you know that this whole sales profession, you can be really good at it. And also, you already are, but I think you know that. And then I kind of just walked out. Having not closed a $1 million business or a $1 million deal or, having not all the accolades that a salesperson would want to be able to say they accomplished it. But I do think about him telling me that. And then now being able to talk about it with you here, it's like, yeah, I think there's a lot of what I learned in those days, even not winning the championship.
And for that to come from someone like you never thought it would come from, and like, you know, what I heard in that story is like the guard was up already. It was like, what's up? Like, like, what are you going to say to me? Because I'm leaving anyway. I got nothing to lose, you know. And then for someone to say, like, listen, like, but I think that that was imparted because of your posture from the beginning. Like, you came in and you're like, listen, this is great what you guys are doing, but this isn't for me. And that might have broken down some walls for the person to go, hey, you know what you want. And in sales or in business, you know, that comfortability with yourself is so powerful because then you're not, our relation isn't to outcome as much as it is to process, to people, to all these things. And if we know who we are, ultimately, like when deals fall through, okay, we still have that posture. You know, when people are snarky towards us, hey, it's not them, it's, you know, it's not us, it's them type thing. So, but I think that your posture going into that, you know, it created a change in that organization you didn't even realize, you didn't even work there, really. So, you know, that's kudos to, you know, the strength that you've had. And that's, I think, ultimately always from your history moving up to the point of where you were at, right? Like years of you know, your family structure, years of your training and baseball and all these things. I mean, that led you to who you were in that moment. You know, we don't just show up where we are today without our history. So.
Thank you. You're right. Kind of catapulted me into the next phase of like, what is next, which was me joining, right, the coaching firm. But that all happened from one of those kind of blessing in disguise moments that I think people we all have them. And it's a story I like to kind of think and remind myself of when I do hit failure, when something doesn't happen for me. And I was selling software again. Maybe people were using it, they weren't using it, whatever, but it didn't hit me. And I was like, I got to go find it. And I'm coaching at a local private school. That was my rival high school. And I'm like trying to figure out what it is as I'm making good money. And I was like, I'm going to go teach public school in Oakland and I'm going to work with the kids. I just bought a home in the Bay Area. It's not cheap here. My wife was super supportive. She was like, whatever you want to do, like, let's go. And I'll never forget Pax. Buddy was living with me at the time. And he told me this years later. He's like, I've never seen you lower. I went to go take my substitute teaching test. I haven't looked at math problems in like 15 years, bro. English, all good. Yeah. I was 1 point short of the math portion of this test to pass it, to be a substitute teacher. Mm. I did not pass a substitute teaching test. Do you know how shame, I was living in shame. I was sitting on the couch, having just made six figures for the first time, working 2-3 hours a day, tried to be a substitute teacher where I'd take an $80,000 pay cut, whatever it was, right? Something crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was so low because I didn't have any type of purpose. There was nothing for me. I was like, I don't know where I'm at. And this was 7 years after I retired. But that thing got me into curiosity again. I was like, just go ask questions, man. Just go ask questions. And through that process, I was introduced to somebody who I worked with at one of these other companies. I'll never forget Danielle for giving me a call. She's like, hey, I work for this quirky, very kind of fun, eclectic communications firm here in San Francisco. You got to come check them out. And that was a pivotal moment. That was the door never opening, truly closing, the blessing in disguise that then allowed me to go find, you know, the step as to that got me here.
Wow. Can you imagine? I'm putting myself on. And I get it. I've been there a million times, but I'm also putting up just on for yourself, like successful in the exterior world, right? And just sitting and just rotting like on the couch and just like, yo, I can't even pass a substitute teacher. My math is unbelievably terrible.
I haven't told too many people that.
Yeah, well, it's going to go on the airwaves soon. So Danielle, was it a friend of yours that worked in?
Yeah.
She reaches out and she says, hey, yeah, come check us out. So you go, so now you're there. So now you're with this communication firm and what happens next?
I walked in, you know, with my J's in the interview and that was a big just part of it. It was like, can I wear these? And, you know, my manager, soon to be boss, was like, yeah, what are you talking about? And I was like, all right, well, that's like checkbox one.
Nice.
Right, I could show it myself, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then if I were to just fast forward, at least initially, let me back up. I go through the interview, Jay's on, approved. I'm in the process of like having my first child also.
Wow.
Right? So there was a lot to where I was like, I'm going to join this company, but you know, hopefully it works out. And sure enough, I walk in, start, and I immerse myself in what they did, right? Leadership development, one-on-one coaching, group training, content development, all things leadership communication. They threw you in front of the room, Pax, and like gave you all the stuff and said, go like study this. And it was, and you talk about intense, probably a lot of the work that you've done in the last 6 weeks in your class, where you're in front, it's vulnerable, you're learning, you're around heavy hitters, and they are phenomenal at their job. And I was like, yo, like give me goosebumps thinking about it now. I was like, I haven't felt this in a minute. This kind of like adrenaline, like, oh, what is this about? Then I had a quick pause because my firstborn was born. And then I came back and I was just immersed. And I had support. I had a counterpart, you know, a good buddy, right? Danny, who was going to bat with me. Imagine having like a battery mate show up and you're like, oh, like, let's go do this together. And then you had the person training you, right? who was open and ready, like, what do you need? I got you, right? Her name is Judy, and she just was like, I got you, like, let's do this. And I just immersed myself in the curriculum. They threw me in front of the room, and I'll never forget, right, seeing my manager at the time in the back of the room. Imagine, back of the room, I got my manager, Jessica, she's sitting in the back, and I'm in front of a group of seasoned sales leaders, right? Of course it was sales leaders. On top of this, like, almost sky rise in San Francisco, doing a public speaking and executive presence training. And as my manager at the time, they have to, like, make sure that you're signed off, but they get to see you live, like, just live. Like. So there's no room to hide. Talk about intense.
Yeah, raw. Yeah.
And these are seasoned people. I'm like, yep. Bang. 8 hours later, because you're in front of the room for 8 hours. Wow. Facilitating, diving in. I'll never forget, after you get a, you know, like, star rating, you get the reviews after. And at that time, the rating system was, like, you know, 1 to 10 on these like 5 categories. And my big boss was like, hey, you swept the board, you hit a home run, dude, 10 out of 10. Welcome. Welcome to the show, right? What he didn't realize was, like, I took that to heart. And I was like, oh, when no one else knows, not my new colleague Danny, not Judy, not any of my other friends there at the company, not my boss at the time, Jessica, nobody. They did not know that I just found what I was supposed to be doing. I was like, this is it. Fast forward 5 years, start running their coaching program for a little bit. Again, continuing to learn, immerse myself in the wonderful people that are there, and fell in love with the craft again. And it had been 8 years since.
Dang, that gave me goosebumps, because it's like that rawness, you know. And I was just thinking that, like, in the front of the room, not only do you need to perform for the clients that they put you in front of, but also for your job, your potential next career. And it's like, but most people, like, I think that's the difference between, like, someone that's had an athletic career and at the next level, that will differentiate someone that maybe hasn't had exposure to that kind of request of performance, right? Like, a lot of people might have not got a 10 out of 10, but you were in your bag. You were like, yo, this feels like home to me. It's just a different uniform, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, you slip right into it.
It was a different uniform. And it is. And I've had some non 10 out of 10s. I'll say that. I've had some ones where, like, sure, I fumbled. Yeah. Big time, right? Those definitely happen. I think what I found was that the energy, that excitement, it was unknown. And it put me back on the mound where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to get. And I still don't know what I'm going to get. Whether I'm on stage speaking, whether I'm a group of 8, a group of 15, I don't know what the people are going to give me. And I got to be able to adapt and pivot on the fly, just like I got to pivot if I'm on the mound and I throw a good pitch and my shortstop makes an error. Or if I throw a good pitch and the guy hits a home run, and then I throw a bad pitch and the guy swings over it. So it gave me a sense of, like, unknown. I was like, yo, this feels familiar. So I think I fell in love with that. And then from there, realized, okay, after doing that for 5 years, I was like, I seem to light up when I talk about sport. Because people ask me, they look you up on LinkedIn, like, hey, what does this person do? Who's this facilitator telling me what to do? And then they're like, hey, a couple of people are like, it looks like you play professional baseball with the Rockies. Oh, when were you there? Oh, I got a cousin who played. Or, oh my gosh, you play baseball? What position? And I dismissed it, Pax. I didn't talk about it. I was like, I don't talk about it. But I would talk about it. And the people who knew me were like, do you realize how important that part of your journey is, man? And I'm like, yeah, I just didn't like all the other guys who all they would do is introduce themselves as baseball players and only talk about baseball, and, like, they had nothing else. So they're like, yeah, but you got something to offer, because the skill set and what you've learned can help other people in their current job, in the mindset work that you've done. You can help people, man. And when somebody told me I can help people and I was being selfish for not talking about my story, unlock. And here we are a year later.
Wow. permission granted for me. Thank you so much. It's so true. Oh my goodness. It's like, why aren't you talking about that? Why aren't you pursuing that? And I think, I don't know, from when I stopped playing, I didn't want to be a coach. Like, I didn't want to be an athletic coach. I just didn't want to stay. I want to do something very different. And everyone comes back to me like, well, why don't you coach? Or why don't you talk to these? Or why don't you use this? And I'm like, a part of us want to stay away from, but we don't want to be identified with the game because of fear that we'll be pigeonholed into just that sport. And I think every athlete feels like that. But from the outside in, everyone's like, well, what you did was amazing. What you did was, you know, the percentages of even making it to college are tiny, right? And we don't see that like that. We see like, well, I don't want to be Paxton the footballer or Charlie the baseball player. Like, but what you just said around like, you know, that story has value to free up other people. Yes. It's not so much about the game. It's about your story. The game is just a piece of the ingredient. You know, like in the whole cake. You know, so that for us to not share that is actually quite selfish. So thanks for giving me that second bit of permission there, for sure, yeah. Because I'm pointing that in my life too. So now you've gone that. I mean, you've been with that company for a long time, but now, based on what you just said, you're, hey, I got to share this story. What are you doing with that now?
Yeah. So, you know, forever grateful for them opening the door and giving me that opportunity to kind of learn and see that this was something that existed in the world. This was a profession. And then after doing that for 5 years, I decided, you know what? I think I want to be able to merge my worlds of this kind of communication background and this performance lens in professional sport. Kind of mold the mindset, the discipline, the communication as a coach, as a player, right? As a leader on the field, and just kind of merge my worlds and create a coaching firm that does a lot of the same work. Except I am working with maybe some professional athletes, professional coaches, and still working with seasoned professional sales leaders in sport, working with CEOs, and executives of these companies. What I realized was over even just this past year after kind of launching, a soft launch of my business, I seem to really enjoy the work of the people who are arguably more disciplined than me. They not only are a CEO, product leader, sales leader, so they have their charter, what they need to do, but they're also, you know what, I want to be a better husband, a mother. I want to be a better friend, a teammate. I want to be a better coach. Whatever they want to be, they want to optimize all areas of their life. And for me, I fell in love with that because that goes back to me fighting against my identity of just being a baseball player. I'm like, good. Because those are the people that understand we are not just our job. And I think today, when I think about what's needed in this specific industry, there's two parts. It's one, permission for that executive to be able to go get time with their kids and be present. And then also be able to share that message with their team. So you're creating that culture so that they also know that my leader has my back. You see the best sports coaches in the world do it. The Steve Kerrs, the Popoviches of the world. The term player coach exists for a reason. Why can't executives in tech or in big business do the same? That's where I feel like I can come help and make some impact.
Yeah. Player coach should be like a title now for everybody. You know, if you're in a position of leadership, like player coach, like get you must have been involved at some point. And now you're in that role of being a coach, and it can fit into really any industry when you look at it. I mean, ultimately, you know, a sports organization is just, if you can run a sports organization well as a coach, you can run any organization. Someone did a study, like Jurgen Klopp, he's a massive Liverpool.
Yep.
He's the manager of Liverpool. And they were like, he could walk into any Fortune 500 company and run it smooth. Right, like there's obviously other factors that go into it, but he could be a CEO of, because of, it's the same process, right? Like there's everything you spoke about, communication, discipline, all these things. It's no secret that athletes are heavily sought after, but now your version of it, Charlie, is, it's not my identity, just the sport. It's who it created me to be within these organizations. And now I want to bring that back into, I want to bring that life back into the world, the world and the business world, where it can be kind of meh. You know, sometimes like business is like, yo, this is like, get some life into this thing. Like, let's, like, this can be fun. This can be a, you know, this can be a game. We can have some fun with this. It doesn't got to be so freaking rigorous, man.
I think that's where it's put up.
Yeah, I agree with you. So now you've got two baby girls, two girls, right?
And two little girls, yeah.
Two little girls. This, I can think I hear him stomping a little bit, running around.
Yeah, no, they're definitely stomping.
I love that. And now, you know, you're in this kind of soft launch of the year, right, with your coaching business. What's next? What are you most excited about from a business standpoint, from a personal and family standpoint? You touched on your wife a little bit, how she was just like amazing rock and supportive. You've got the two little girls on the way. Like, what's next for Charlie in the business form, in the life form, in the reach goal? Like, you know, let's throw it all out there.
Kind of the, what am I excited about right now?
Mm.
A lot. Being bold. I think where I see myself playing in this space, I think as I expand and truly grow out an organization, right? Not just taking this out solopreneur freelance hat, but building out, you know, a team of other former professional athletes or people with unique experiences that have an unconventional background that can then serve others that are trying to optimize all different areas of their life. I think as I build this out, I'm excited to be bold with how I'm doing it my way. Mm. Again, as I mentioned, very easy to get caught into the trends in this space, right? It is very trendy. It is the most saturated place you can probably have a career. Yeah. And all while that is the truth, I also know that there's a reason in how I'm doing it. There's a reason to why I'm doing it. And I'm excited to be able to put that message out there even more. And I think that's where the connection comes in for me, right? CLR connection, clearly CLR, those are my initials. But it's being able to connect to the stories and who you are as an individual, and then to be able to translate that not only as a reminder for yourself, but for your team. If we're a collection of stories, how are we connecting to it? Like, I had a conversation with a buddy yesterday, old guy coach that was in the wedding party, like, again, full circle. And we're talking, and very confident man, like very intuitive man. But now as he's getting into this next phase, he's like, I don't even know where to go. So as he's maybe getting into some sales job in tech, where I feel like I can also play, not just with the executives and making sure they know their story and where they came from and how they can translate that to their team, but it's taking this person, this athlete, who has now transitioned into this next career, be that sales, be that product, be that acting, be that whatever it is, and reminding them of their story so that they can keep those same systems and habits and disciplines locked in and perform. So for me, my business and what I'm building, it is that. It's helping those leaders, whether you're a leader of self or a leader of team, connect to your story and who you are and build out your performance systems based on that. Not on anyone else. Not on anyone else. We've been doing it a long time on everyone else's watch. We'll work for you. Let's build that out. Let's program that. You want to share that with your team? Great. We can do that. You want to do that for yourself? That's where we're going to start. And that's what I'm excited about building. A coach and a suite of coaches that can do the same thing with me.
Being bold, and we're all a collection of stories. I love that. We're all a collection of stories. And it's like, well, how do we put our story into our work? And that's powerful. That works in every walk of life. Charlie, man, thanks so much for jumping on and just being an open book. I can rock with you all day, man. I love talking with you and hearing your stories. But I'm going to give you permission this week to deload as well. Just like your sign says in the back, less is more. And I think that that's the motive for this week. But Charlie, thank you again for jumping on today, being an open book, and pouring your heart into this and into your family and into your coaching practice. I know for sure that you know, success is just around the corner, as it, you know, it's already here, but there's even more on the way. So thank you again for jumping on.
Appreciate you, Pax. Right on, man.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.